It is a State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here as we get acquainted with the policy priorities of first-term Democratic Representative Clinton Anderson of Beloit. His constituents span portions of Greene and Rock counties in the 45th Assembly District. You've aligned to a lawmaker. Join in by calling with questions you have, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Clinton Anderson, welcome to the Ideas Network.
I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Legislators across the state, they're holding listening sessions. You've been a part of this spring to gather the input on the next two-year state budget. What are you learning from these budget conversations?
We held three of them with myself and Senator Spreitzer, who's my state senator, and we heard a lot of common themes, whether it was in Beloit, whether it was in Broadhead, whether it was in Evansville. We heard people wanting to make sure that we have proper school funding. Shared revenue was a conversation. We had a lot of local elected officials who attended, and a lot of conversations around mental health and infrastructure. So didn't matter where exactly we were, there was a common theme across the board. And I think even with the folks that are doing the Joint Finance Committee listening sessions are probably hearing about the same thing too. And it's a good indicator that those are probably the topics we should be focusing on in the budget.
Are the things you're hearing new, or do they track with what you have heard in the past as Beloit City Council President?
They're pretty close. I mean, shared revenues are obviously been a conversation that we've had over my 6 years when I was on the council. With it remaining flat for over a decade, it's really tough to keep up with inflation, keep up with rising costs, and also it's really difficult to expand services and expand opportunities in your community when you have no more new money. That's one of the main streams of revenue that the city of Beloit has and mainstream revenue that most communities have as well.
Governor Evers is calling for dedicating 20% of the state sales taxes to fund local governments in the next budget. Prior to being elected to the Assembly, you, as I mentioned, were on the Beloit City Council. How would additional state funding be used in communities like Beloit?
There's a lot of opportunities, and that's what's great about the shared revenue funds is that the communities are able to make the best decisions for themselves. As I said before, I took this office, the needs of Evansville are different from Beloit, and they're different from Broadhead, different from Orchardville, and even places like Monticello and Albany. So letting those municipalities have the authority to do what's best for them, because each community has unique needs. So I think every community is going to welcome extra funding to address the topics that are of concern for them, whether it's roads, whether it's staffing. It's just great that they can have a chance to address those unique needs for themselves.
Do you think there are different unique needs and perspectives when residents live on or near the state line?
Somewhat. I mean, somewhat. I don't think it's drastically different. I mean, we have our tourism industry is a little different than some other places because people might just stop off the highway when they come into Wisconsin. I know when I travel, when I get into a new state, that's usually when I like to pull over and get some gas or go get something to eat. So that'd be the only major difference I would notice.
Should local governments have fewer limits on like hiking sales taxes or property taxes? What impacts do you see there?
Well, in the governor's proposal, he is allowing municipalities that have a population of 30,000 or more to implement a 0.5% municipal sales tax. This could provide some relief for people that are really worried about paying more property taxes, and it's another stream of revenue that right now the municipalities, with the exception of Milwaukee, have. Our counties are able to do it, and I believe almost all the counties in the state of Wisconsin have implemented that sales tax. So giving that as another tool in a toolbox for local government is really important. So I hope that we get that through in the budget.
We're exploring the priorities of a first-term state legislator, Democratic Representative Clinton Anderson of Beloit. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Looking at the sales and property taxes, there's been the concern over net new construction calculated by the state. And a municipality is allowed to increase its levy over the amount it levied during the prior year by the percentage increase in net new construction. Do you find that there is constraint in that, or what, do you have any issues with that?
I do have a lot of concerns with it. I know that in Beloit, we're very lucky that we've had a lot of new development, which is the only thing that's kept us from making some really tough decisions financially. There's a lot of communities, for example, Evansville and Albany. I know that I've talked to folks there, and they don't have any opportunities to really expand and do a lot of net new construction. So they're really constrained by these levy limits. So doing it based on net new construction is really harmful for communities that are landlocked or have no opportunity to build on new property.
What do you think is the alternative?
I think one is addressing the amount of shared revenue. I think that is step one. And then allowing other streams of revenue, having them be only allowed to increase levy based on net new construction is really difficult and challenging. So giving them more streams of revenue and more opportunities to have money and flexibility is really important. So that's really where we need to start.
Aside from the shared revenue and state funding streams, what are other pressing issues for local governments here in Wisconsin and other issues you have your eye on?
I think just the stuff that's in the budget, I think the funding is the big top priority, whether it's in cities or towns, which I think folks might have heard on their most recent break here on WPR was talking about the funding for road construction in rural communities. A lot of them are unable to receive grant funding based on the side of the definition of a bridge. So it has to be over, I think 6 feet or 20 feet. There is a lot of structures that aren't big enough to qualify for grants. So funding for an inventory is really important so we can see what we need to look at, making sure we can get them consistent funding versus one-time funding. When I was at a district meeting for the Towns Association, a lot of them said, well, we prefer to have stable funding. We'll take grant funding, but they want stability just like everybody else would, whether it's in our personal lives or when it comes to a business or government. We want consistency and making competitive grants that are very limited. And definitely there's a higher demand than there is for the amount of money we're giving. So tackling the road funding for townships is also another thing we need to be doing.
I want to turn to farmland and land preservation. You're supporting expanding eligibility for farmland preservation programs and the tax credits that go with them. Why are more financial incentives needed to preserve farmland?
Well, first off, we did just pass that in the assembly on a voice vote. So that was really, really exciting to see. I'm on the ag committee and it passed unanimously out of that committee as well. The incentives basically were just to get more people to stay in it. We heard that folks weren't interested in the length of the commitment. It was 15 years. This bill lowered it to 10 years that they'd be in the farmland preservation program. It also increased the dollar amount per acre to also further incentivize. And on top of that, we also indexed it to inflation so that we don't have to keep coming back and having this conversation, because we want to make sure that as many farmers are participating as possible. We know that once that agricultural land is developed, the odds of becoming farmland are almost none. So anything we can do to incentivize farmers to keep that land in use is really important. And farmland preservation program does help us do that.
How are farmers doing in your district? Is farmland being swallowed up and redeveloped in your district, or do you see farmers struggling?
I think you see this everywhere. You see a lot of farmers getting out of it. You see a lot less ag land than we did 10 years ago. This is just another tool for them to use to incentivize them to keep that farmland in use. It's really important that we do that and make sure that it's also in good quality health for years to come, so that when the next generation of farmers are starting to get involved, that they have no issues with soil and water quality.
Democratic Representative Clinton Anderson of Beloit with us discussing policy priorities in his first term in the legislature. Call in about issues you want to cover, questions you have for a state lawmaker, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Democratic Representative Clinton Anderson of Beloit in a South Central district along the Illinois border. Previously served as the Beloit City Council President before being sworn into the Assembly in January. Call in with questions, concerns, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You are a member of the Young Elected Officials Network, that organization for progressives elected officials under age 35. How are you urging Democrats in Wisconsin to become more progressive?
Well, I think we have a very diverse caucus, so it's more just having conversations. It's, I like to think of things as a long game. I remember years ago when you had someone like Senator Bernie Sanders saying $15 minimum wage, and it was seen as this crazy idea that why would we do that? Now that's the common phrase that everybody uses when they're trying to convince people to get involved in the workforce, or like, well, we pay $15 an hour. So it's about just having those repeated conversations and making a case for why things need to be done a certain way. And being involved in that network has been very helpful to hear stories from other elected officials that are very inspiring.
Do you think progressive Democrats are in alignment with the caucus as a whole in our state legislature, or is there some divergence in the party?
I mean, I wouldn't say there's divergence. I mean, I think there's differing opinions, but I don't think we've seen such a wild disagreement that we've had any difficulties having a conversation. Like I said, the Democratic Party is a big tent party. And I think you really do see that in our caucus, but I think the dialogue's been very healthy.
Do you see room for Democratic socialists in the caucus?
Well, we have two socialists in the caucus now, and I think it's just a testament to how welcoming this caucus is, that we have people of various different views. And it's just, like I said, testament to the Democratic Party as a whole. We're very accepting.
Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is in Delafield. Jeff, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Yes, good morning. I think a tie can be made to the issue of farmland preservation and the lack of shared revenue for municipalities. One of the reasons that farmland is converted to development is because of the lack of shared revenue, and it forces the municipality to greenlight more and more development to pay for it, you know, the cost of its government. So it's kind of counterintuitive to the idea of farmland preservation. And the other comment I have is in regards to landowners who want to preserve native landscapes, grasslands, plant trees, that sort of thing. They're severely penalized as opposed to if they were to grow row crops. As soon as you plant a tree or convert it to native grassland, your taxes are going to go up significantly. So that's also a real problem. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you for sharing these insights. Democratic Representative Clinton Anderson, what do you hear there in the tensions between farmland preservation and shared revenue first?
Well, I know that caller can't say it, but I'm smiling when he made that connection because I think it's such a valid point. There is incentive to develop property when you have nothing else to do. So when there is no extra revenue coming in, you do everything you can, even if that means giving up farmland. So I really appreciate that call. That actually that was a really nice, good tie-in. I thought that was a good connection to make.
To qualify for the benefits of the farmland preservation programs, landowners must meet these conservation standards for soil and water. Jeff bringing up native landscapes. Are the conservation standards strict enough? Do they go far enough?
I think they're fair. And some of it, too, is that we want to make sure farmers are incentivized. And the way I've seen a lot of positive change, especially during my short tenure here, is that when you get farmers to buy in, they'll convince other farmers to get involved. And I think immediately of watershed protection groups. We have a really great watershed protection groups in both Rock and Green counties. It's farmers talking about strategies they're using, whether it's no-till, whether it's cover crops, and talking about soil health as a whole. So when you get farmers in a room, you get them to buy in, that's when you're going to see this really take off. So I think right now our conservation efforts are good. I think letting farmers buy in is really the right step. And I think you're seeing the benefits of it already.
We're going to turn now to marijuana. Governor Evers' budget includes a proposal to legalize recreational marijuana in the state. Across the border in South Beloit is a marijuana dispensary. How is nearby access to marijuana affecting the communities that you represent along the border?
Well, I did a little experiment. I went and went to the parking lot and talked to a manager at Sunnyside Dispensary there in South Beloit. And I'll tell you, I think I only saw one or two Illinois license plates. Every single vehicle was a Wisconsin plate. And in fact, the manager thanked me for having marijuana still be illegal because he said we're getting a lot of money because of it. So we're really behind the eight ball in this. I think the whole state is suffering, not just the state line area, from this being legal in Michigan and in Illinois. We're not just losing tax dollars, we're losing economic opportunities. These are new businesses. These are better jobs. These are things that bring people to visit the state. So it's not just a state line issue. It's a Wisconsin issue.
Recently, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said that the GOP is working to introduce a plan for legalizing medical cannabis by this fall. How would legalizing medical marijuana affect people where you live?
Well, once again, it's not just a localized issue, it's a state issue. I know that medicinal marijuana has been proven to help people with a lot of underlying health issues. So it's a step in the right direction. Obviously, I think myself and many other people in my caucus would agree that going full legalization is the best route. I mean, we had a series of referenda across the state about legalization, and obviously medicinal was very, very popular, but recreational as well was well over 50-60% of the vote for those that participated. So medicinal is a step in the right direction. It does have a lot of benefits. I'm looking forward to seeing that proposal.
What do you think is holding back your colleagues across the aisle on recreational marijuana?
I think some of it could just be not knowing or concerns with some of the talking points I might have seen. I don't know what else would hold them back, honestly, because I think that if you're looking at the economics of it, it's great. If you look at we're also going to have less people that'll be incarcerated because of small amounts of marijuana, which will also save us money. It's a money generator, and it's also been proven not to be as recklessly dangerous as they like to reference all the time. I know they like to use Colorado as this big, scary place, but I think Colorado's really seen an economic boom since they legalized about 6 years ago.
We're looking at the priorities of Democratic Representative Clinton Anderson of Beloit, first-term state lawmaker. You can join in with your questions and concerns at 800-642-1234. We heard from Marcus in Milwaukee called in, and Marcus notes that they see a lot of vape cartridges and batteries littering the ground, and they're wondering what cities or the legislature could do to address this type of e-waste that Marcus is seeing.
I'm not sure, and I mean, we don't know what was in those cartridges, but I think that's going to be a lot of municipalities taking onus on that. I know that if we had that going on in my community in Beloit, we would start addressing need locally first. I think not everything is a state lawmaker solution. Sometimes it's a local solution.
The Beloit Police Department is reporting more people are dying from drug overdoses this year compared to last year. What efforts in the Capitol are priorities for reducing drug overdoses?
Well, one bill that's out is requiring school districts to have Narcan in buildings. I think that's a good step for us to really address the need. I've got Narcan with me. That is just a small thing we can do to reduce the people that die from overdoses. It's also education and letting people know that whatever people's opinions of someone who's dealing with addiction are, it could be anybody. It doesn't have to be someone who looks like they're just out in the streets. It could be your coworkers. It could be your family members. It could be a teacher. It could be anybody. So us really reducing the stigma is also going to be a step that is beyond the Capitol, but I think it's something that we should all be acknowledging and recognizing.
When you say you have Narcan with you, do you carry it like in your car?
Yes. Now, when it gets to certain temperatures, obviously you need to make sure you're being safe with it because you want it to not get too cold because that can also affect it. But I do have it. We have a lot of great agencies in this area that give it out for free. It's a nasal spray, which I do recommend people getting. It's really simple, and if somebody isn't having an overdose and you use it on them, it's not going to do any harm either. So it's just another thing that we should all be carrying with us and being mindful of.
Representative Clinton Anderson, thank you for joining us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Clinton Anderson represents the 45th Assembly District, which includes portions of Greene and Rock County. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.